several weeks, as we have been engaged in our honest conversations about food security during Sunday school, we've also taken a deep dive into the biblical stories of feeding the multitudes. We've explored the feeding stories of all four gospel writers, and we've discovered some important truths about generosity and abundance and God's plan for God's people and God's church. This morning, we make a bit of a shift to look at a different scripture. It's a different story, still centered on food, one built also around themes of generosity, welcome, and hospitality. And this story, like the feeding miracles, has some important truths to contribute to our continuing discussion of how to ensure that everyone has the food they need. But before we dive into the story, I'd like to ask you to think for just a second about social customs. Last Sunday at church, I saw something that made me smile. A couple of weeks ago, Connie Worrell brought a container to church with a chicken egg salad sandwich in it, and she sent it home with Tad and Debbie. Last Sunday, Tad brought back the container to Connie, washed and filled with Debbie's homemade cookies. It's the kind of gesture my grandmother's taught me. When someone does something nice for you, thank them and then find a way to be kind in return. We all grew up learning manners, from Emily Post to Amy Vanderbilt to Miss Manners. Teaching people how to treat others with kindness is big business. Many of the rules for treating others kindly are ones we learned from our parents or our grandparents. Chew with your mouth closed. Don't interrupt. Wait your turn. Say please. Cover your mouth when you sneeze or cough. Wait until everyone is served to eat. They're the kinds of rules that are unwritten, but everyone understands them and knows they're expected. And they help us live together with other people more smoothly and more graciously. Social rules have existed since the beginning of time. And understanding a little more about the social rules and expectations that Jewish people had during the time of Jesus will help us understand a little more about the parable of the great banquet. The story we read this morning starts in the middle of an interaction between Jesus and some of the Pharisees, one of whom had invited Jesus to dinner at his home on the Sabbath. This kind of invitation was not that unusual. Jesus ate with the Pharisees fairly often. He was eating at the home of Simon the Pharisee when a woman who had made some bad decisions in life came in, fell at his feet, and wept for forgiveness. On a different occasion, Jesus entered a Pharisee's house and sat down to dinner without completing the ceremonial washing that was to be expected. And at the beginning of the chapter we read today, Jesus stopped eating when a man entered who was suffering from severe fluid retention, a condition they called dropsy at the time. Jesus asked the Pharisees if it was lawful to heal someone on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees reacted with complete silence, even when Jesus went on to heal the man. Not surprisingly, this healing only added to the Pharisees' anger and hostility toward Jesus because he was not following the religious rules of the day. And in response to the Pharisees' silence, Jesus told the parable, known as the parable of the Great Supper or the Great Banquet. Imagine the scene. A wealthy man decided to throw a dinner party, so he sat down and he created a guest list. At that time, being invited to eat in someone else's home was an honor and a measure of social status. Hosts generally only invited people of similar social status, and they issued their invitations well in advance. So the man sent his servant out to invite his wealthy neighbors, to give them the date, give them the time, and to have them confirm whether they were coming. Yet on the evening of the banquet, when the man sent out his servant again to tell those who had responded yes that the meal was ready, which was part of the custom, all of them suddenly had other commitments and decided they couldn't come. And their excuses were really, really flimsy. One man said he'd just bought a piece of land and needed to go see it. But it was night, And besides, who buys land without going and examining it first? Another said he'd just bought 5 yoke of oxen and wanted to try them out. But again, it was night, and who plows their fields at night? And a man who could afford that many oxen had people working for him who could take care of them. And the third man said that he couldn't come because he'd just gotten married. But being a newlywed was a valid excuse for skipping military service, not for missing a banquet. Why had the man accepted the invitation if he knew he was getting married so soon? And why couldn't his new wife handle one evening without him? Women were not usually invited to these kinds of feasts. One by one, all of the invited guests came up with lame reasons not to attend. A little like my high school friend, who always used the excuse of needing to stay home and enzyme her contact lenses if she didn't want to go do something with us. The man had gone to a lot of trouble and expense to host this banquet for his neighbors, and he was justifiably angry when he was left sitting alone at the dinner table. And so he did something unheard of. He sent his servant back out to the streets with instructions to invite a different group of people: the social outcasts, the poor, the blind, the lame, people who would never be invited to a party like this. The servant did as he instructed, and the people came. But there was still room at the table, and so he sent the servant farther out to the outskirts of the town, searching for more marginalized people to bring in so all the seats at the table would be filled. The end of this story would have been shocking to the Pharisees, who had definite ideas about right and wrong, about who was proper company, about who should be invited and who should not. Eating dinner with people below your social class was frowned upon, and bringing the homeless off the street to join your dinner party was completely unheard of. And yet the host did exactly that. He invited those who were considered undesirable. And in the process, he extended an incredible measure of grace to those who never would have expected it. The first invitation to other wealthy people in the community was expected. The second was completely unexpected. And when there was still room at the table, the host extended that grace even further to people who lived outside the city. Many scholars believe the first group were Jews, the second were Gentiles. The invitation included everyone, even people whose presence at the dinner table was considered shocking. There are some obvious lessons we can take from this parable as we reflect on how to support those who can't count on having enough to eat. Obviously, things that we already do, donating food to the co-op or to the little free pantry, delivering food to other people, making dinner for family promise, are ways to make sure people have the food that they need. But there's another dimension to feeding people, in addition to buying extra cans of chicken or boxes of mac and cheese when you're at the grocery store. This story reminds us that those who are hungry are just as important to God as we are. It's a reminder to look beyond our usual social groups and get to know people who don't have the resources we do, to rethink our place at God's table, to imagine a table and a world where social groups are upended, where nobody is judged by the money they make or the status of their work or the prestige of their family members, where everyone sits and eats together, where everyone has a place, a world, and a table with room for all. At church camp, we sing a song called Big House that describes this kind of place. Those of you who go to camp know it well, I'm sure. The chorus says, "Come and go with me to my Father's house. Come and go with me to my Father's house." It's a big, big house with lots and lots of room, a big, big table with lots and lots of food, a big, big yard where we can play football, a big, big house. It's my Father's house. Libby and maybe some volunteers who are going to help her are going to help to join us in singing, or lead us in singing this chorus now. And as we do, I invite you to really think about God's house and God's table with room enough for everyone. JT, we have words on the next slide.
vineyard where we can play football. Touchdown!
A big, big house. It's my Father's house. Come and go with me to my Father's house. Come and go with me to my Father's house. It's a big, big house with lots and lots of room. A big, big table with lots and lots of food. A big, big yard where we can play football. Touchdown!
Jesus used the parable of the great banquet to paint a picture of God's kingdom. He presented an alternative way to live, a different way of seeing the value of others that does not depend on wealth or social status, because those are not the measures God uses to decide our importance. And the parable warned the Pharisees and us that it's risky to assume that we know who will be first and who will be last in God's kingdom. We live in a world that teaches us to put our own self-interest first, to do whatever will help us get ahead in the world. Jesus teaches us to live a completely different way. Extend hospitality, not just to people like us or to our close friends, but to those who look or live or act very differently, including those who don't have the resources we have. Give freely and help others without expecting anything in return. After all, the host who invited the homeless people to his dinner party wasn't expecting them to throw him a lavish party later. And extend God's love and grace to include everyone, for everyone matters to God, and everyone is invited to participate in God's great banquet. This invitation to hospitality and inclusion changes how we think a little about ensuring that everyone has the food they need. It's not just about buying food and making it available to people who can't afford to feed their families. It's also about inviting those people to share our table, to eat with us. Think for a minute about your lunch table when you were in middle school or high school. How did you choose where to eat in the cafeteria? Did you sit with the same people every day? What would you have done if someone new came up and tried to join your lunch table? There is room for everyone at God's table, and it's our responsibility to extend God's grace and hospitality. There's something special about sitting down and eating together. When I led the Disciples on Campus group in Athens, there was a year where we prepared meals for the Athens area homeless shelter about once a month. And one of the best parts of that outreach project was actually sitting down and eating with the families. There's something about breaking bread together and sharing conversation that really connects us as children of God. So the next time we prepare meals for Family Promise, consider taking the time to sit down and eat dinner with the families and learn their stories. At the table in Athens, one of our favorite worship songs is called Crowded Table by the Highwaymen. It's not specifically a religious song, but it has beautiful messages of hospitality and abundance and welcome. One of the verses says, if we want a garden, we're going to have to sow the seeds. Plant a little happiness, let the roots run deep. If it's love that we give, then it's love that we reap. If we want a garden, we're going to have to sow the seeds. And the chorus begins, I want a house with a crowded table and a place by the fire for everyone. And as we think about food insecurity, it's important to remember that God's hospitality and God's table are big enough to include all of us. For our God is truly a God of abundance. God invites us all to feast together. We have the choice to accept God's invitation, as the social outcast did, or to reject it, as the wealthy guest did. And we have the responsibility to extend God's hospitality to others, to invite them to the table to share in God's abundance. After all, there's more than enough room for all of us at God's table. Amen.